Chapter 19. Dream On. Friday was a better day. To Harry's delight, Professor Lupin appeared in specialized defense to lecture about mental discipline, and it was far easier to listen to him than Smythe Wellington.
The concept of mastering oneself and one's emotions can be found in many cultures. This does not mean simply eliminating feelings. No one wants to do that.
Harry could not help smiling.
It is about preventing our feelings from getting in the way of making the right choices. In combat, mastering our fear or anger can be the difference between life and death.
Harry saw Smythe Wellington watching him and quickly looked away. Ron and Hermione were right. I'm not letting you scare me off. He supposed he ought to say he was sorry for snapping at them the night before. The practical exercise Professors Lupin and Smythe Wellington gave them was a little less than successful. They assigned the class into two student teams for some simple duels, which would have been fine if they'd been able to pick their own partners, but Harry found himself partnered with Blaise Zabini against a team of Malfoy and Neville, of all people. The duel went exactly as predicted. When it was their turn, Harry and Zabini went scowling at each other to the front of the room to meet Malfoy and Neville, who were also exchanging glares.
"If I see any of you pointing wands at your partners, it will be 50 points from your house,"
said Smythe Wellington. Harry dared a glance at Professor Lupin and got a faint grimace in return.
"Wands ready. No spells are to be cast that cause lasting injury. Ready?"
Harry took aim at Malfoy, Zabini at Neville.
"Begin."
"Calm. Right."
Harry shot a disarming spell at Malfoy, who blocked it and threw a jellylegs curse back. Zabini was firing off curses one after the other at Neville, who was impressively holding his own. Very impressively, in fact. Zabini and Malfoy were exchanging quick, confused glances. Harry thought proudly that maybe a few of them should have joined the DA. But eventually Neville went down, and then Harry was stuck fending off Malfoy while Zabini stood by and smirked.
"Mr. Zabini, kindly participate,"
Smythe Wellington snapped.
"Yes, ma'am."
Zabini fired a spell at Malfoy that put up a reflecting shield which resulted in Harry being hit by his own stunner. Fortunately it was a glancing hit, and while Harry floated in a greenish haze for several moments he didn't quite lose consciousness. It faded, and he found Professor Lupin kneeling over him as Smythe Wellington berated Malfoy and Zabini in the background. Harry had to grin, and Remus said cheerfully,
"Well, your team won."
Harry grinned broader.
Hogwarts, danger from within? Questions are being raised by concerned parents and numerous officials in the Ministry of Magic about the potential danger of the continued presence of the boy who lived at Hogwarts School.
We sympathize with the boy's situation, but we must consider the safety of the rest of the student body,
said the Minister for Magic at a meeting with the Hogwarts Board of Governors.
It may be necessary to remove Potter from Hogwarts for the duration of the war.
The proposal still met with considerable opposition from witches and wizards who expressed concern for Potter's safety outside of the school.
This would be a terrible overreaction to the Quidditch attack. Obviously the boy who lived was not the only target, nor will his absence guarantee the school's safety, said Madame Amelia Bones. We cannot consider expelling an innocent student out of hysteria.
Proponents of the measure argue that the move would be considered a temporary suspension, during which time young Potter would have the choice of seeking private tutoring or resuming at Hogwarts when the danger is deemed to have passed.
I don't think it's extreme at all,
said Minister Fudge.
How many more innocent students will be hurt the next time you-know-whose people invade Hogwarts looking for Potter?
Harry yawned as he folded up the paper.
Can't say I'm surprised.
He really does have it in for you, Ron muttered before taking a bite of toast.
He blames me for all this, said Harry. For Voldemort coming back.
At Ron and Hermione's frowns, he explained,
Percy told me.
Ginny paused from feeding bacon to Bastet and stared at them.
Is that why you didn't tell Fudge about...
She raised her eyebrows. Harry nodded. feeling a pang of regret, imagining their faces if they knew what Percy had really done. But he'd given his word, and for once Percy was dead right about the consequences if anyone found out. Yeah, and we'd better not mention it. Percy would be in serious trouble for withholding information like that. They all nodded gravely, and Harry yawned again.
You look awfully tired, mate. Are you sleeping all right? Ron asked.
Harry shrugged. Not really, but there haven't been any dreams for almost a week.
Do you think you're getting better?
Asked Hermione. Pushing away his half-eaten porridge, Harry frowned.
I don't know. Maybe Voldemort's just being quiet lately. I don't think my mind's any clearer. Professor Lupin's going to start helping on that.
That's nice of him, said Hermione. He uses a lot of that discipline for his condition. Mental calm all the time makes full moons easier to get through.
That must be how he's so cool with Snape, Ron whispered, and they all laughed.
The bell rang, and Neville came to join them for the walk to class.
We're doing more teamwork in Professor Lupin's class today.
I just hope he doesn't carry on Smythe Wellington's spirit of inter-house partnerships, Harry groaned, picking up his book bag.
Hey, you all team one on Friday?
True, but I still got 10 points off for not hexing you, Harry laughed, and stood up. Then the world tilted and turned green.
Ah! Whoa, Harry!
Ron and Neville grabbed and steadied him.
What's the matter?
Harry sat heavily back down, and the dizzy spell passed as quickly as it had come.
I think I just stood up too fast.
Hermione and Ginny had joined them, wearing identical worried expressions.
Are you sure? Should we get a professor?
Hermione offered. Slowly, Harry got up again, ignoring the glances being cast in his direction. This time his vision was clear. He took a deep breath.
No, it's gone. Didn't say anything? Ron muttered at him.
Nothing. Harry rubbed his eyes. Hermione glanced at the table and Harry's picked-out food.
Maybe you should eat a little bit more.
Hermione!
Harry and Ron chorused. She raised her hands in protest.
Sorry, I just don't want you to faint in class.
Harry sighed.
I'm fine, just a little tired. I promise, if it happens again, I'll talk to someone,
he told her placatingly. Ron visibly stifled a laugh, but smoothly ushered Hermione off to defense class while Harry and Neville trailed sniggering behind. In class, to Harry's relief, they learned team defensive maneuvers like the reflecting shield Zabini had used on Malfoy against Harry the previous week. For the time being, Professor Lupin told them, they would be allowed to choose their own teams.
But eventually I'll be pairing you off myself, and your entire mark for those exercises will be how well you back your partner, no matter who it is.
Remus didn't look directly at Harry and Neville, but he smiled in a way that made them chuckle sheepishly. That class was fun. Harry and Neville partnered against Ron and Hermione, and the match was fairly even. Harry didn't even mind so much when he and Neville lost. Ron and Hermione had ganged up on Harry before finishing off Neville, laughing all the way. Professor Lupin gave Gryffindor 10 points for how well their two teams worked together. After class, he held Harry back.
Shall we start working on discipline today?
I'd like to,
said Harry eagerly.
All right, said Remus with a smile. Report for yet another detention this evening.
Harry giggled, but asked,
What about occlumency?
I'll speak to Professor Snape. This may be just as important in the long run.
Thank you, Professor,
said Harry with such feeling that Remus laughed.
How is Care of Magical Creatures coming?
I think Daisy's beginning to like me.
Remus laughed harder. As predicted by all concerned, Professor Snape had been all too happy to release Harry for the evening to Professor Lupin's instruction, so it was with a much lighter heart that Harry said goodbye to his friends after dinner. Remus was waiting for him in his office.
I warned you that this would take some effort. Complicated spells like the Patronus come easily to you, but what you're trying to master now is far less controllable than your own magic.
Harry joined him by the fire.
If you could do it, I can. I have to, don't I?
Remus smiled.
I know you can do it, or I wouldn't suggest it. Now, what you're learning to do is find a way to detach yourself from your emotional responses. This does not mean losing your emotions, Harry, only limiting their power over you. This will aid you in not panicking if you find yourself in serious danger, and not being provoked to anger when certain people try to goad you."
He gave Harry a knowing look, and Harry felt himself blush.
"Obviously, the latter is particularly important in your case."
Harry grinned sheepishly. "It'd be nice if Snape couldn't get to me so easily."
"Professor Snape, Harry, just remember, it is up to you to prevent him," said Remus. "Are you ready?"
Harry nodded.
"All right. What you're going to start learning are ways of calming yourself. It'll seem easy now because you are calm already, but in time you will automatically draw on these methods when you become agitated. Can you try that from now on?"
"Yes," said Harry, feeling a little nervous. Would he be able to gain that control over his emotions? The only time he had ever felt untouchable had been that first week of summer at Privet Drive, and he didn't want that hollow feeling to come back again. But Remus said,
"Right then, what you're just going to do now is breathe."
Harry blinked at him, and he laughed.
"I'm serious. Go on, close your eyes."
A little giggle escaped Harry, but he obeyed.
"Now breathe, deep and slow. In through your nose, out through your mouth."
It felt a little odd at first, but Harry forced himself to keep doing it so he could pay attention to Lupin's soft voice.
"Now, what you are searching for is a place where you can evade emotional urges. It's deep inside you, your center, your grounding point. When you touch it, no matter how upset you are, you will orient yourself and calm again."
"I don't understand," Harry said, looking at him.
"It takes practice. It's not like a Patronus. A specific thought is not enough, although some people do envision their center as a place. Some are very peaceful. Not emotional or powerful. Just calm."
Remus regarded Harry.
"Close your eyes again. Can you find a place?"
Harry thought for a moment, his mind going instantly to his mother's arms in the pillow chamber. "There was a place. It's a memory, actually. But Professor Snape says it has too much power over me."
"He's probably right. You don't want to use specific memories as blocks in occlumency. They can be used as stepping stones further into your mind. Try to imagine a neutral place, one that looks peaceful to you without being closely connected to your memories or feelings,"
Remus said. Harry closed his eyes obediently, thinking of something peaceful, and finally settling on a quiet clearing in the woods, with the ground nice and grassy. Then it reminded him too much of the dark forest, so he imagined bright blue sky through the trees, and sunlight streaming down.
"All right, I think I have it." "Good," said Remus. "Now, any time you start to become upset or afraid, try to find that place. Remember to breathe, that's important. It's a place where no one can reach you. Even if you're, say, standing in potions getting grief from a certain professor who shall remain nameless,"
Harry sniggered,
"inside you will be in that center where he and others can't reach you. Let it be your escape inside yourself."
Harry opened his eyes. "How will that help me in occlumency?"
"You've used specific memories to block him before, haven't you?"
Remus said pointedly.
"Now use your center instead. Concentrate on it when he attacks."
Harry nodded.
"Perhaps it just might work.
I think this will help. Thanks."
"Don't mention it. And before you go to bed, be sure and sit for a few minutes and do what we've just done. Breathe, as I showed you, and find your center. Use that to clear your mind before sleeping."
Remus smiled.
"Speaking of which, have you had any more visions?"
"Not since last week," Harry said. "In fact, I can't remember much in the way of dreams at all." Remus's centering technique did seem to work. It was amazing how easy it was to take seriously when it was taught by someone who didn't treat Harry like a bloody punching bag. Harry dutifully practiced every night before going to bed, and found that it even seemed to stay with him in his sleep. Although the odd thing was that when he saw his forest hideaway in his dreams, it was always night time. Even though he was feeling rather tired lately, Harry felt a little better about life after starting the lessons. During their next DA meeting, Harry took the lead once more, and they worked in groups, practicing the reflecting shields and group defense spells they'd started in defense that week, and then the first aid spells they'd begun learning in charms.
"After all, it seems unlikely we'll come out of a duel with Death Eaters unscathed,"
Hermione observed. Everyone laughed, and they went to work on the dummies that Harry had persuaded Professor Flitwick to let them borrow. Harry and Ginny were the first to get the resuscitating spells down, well, aside from Hermione, and were soon grouped with Ron and Neville, gleefully performing a spontaneous melodrama of resuscitating their dummy who had befallen one of the various gruesome deaths that Harry and Ron had used to dream up for divination. By the time they were done, the entire club was convulsed with laughter.
"Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is us, the evil and highly subversive Dumbledore's army," sobbed Justin, slapping the floor. "Reviving wizards who have had the misfortune to be trampled by herds of friendly hippogriffs, or fell off the astronomy tower during a mad snog,"
cried Dean.
"What'll Fudge make of it?"
laughed Neville.
"Us doing first aid spells."
"Aiding fugitives from justice, of course," said Ernie,
without seeing the look on Harry's face.
Or storming the ministry and wrapping people in conjured bandages," said Ron quickly.
Harry had to laugh at the image.
"Yes, we're dangerous.
We're fearless.
We're evil.
Enemies of incompetent ministers everywhere."
Later that week, Harry went with Ron and Hermione to visit Fred in the hospital wing. George was still staying with him, refusing point-blank to be pried out of the hospital wing until Fred was released, and the rest of the Weasleys visited nearly every day. Once Fred got to the point of complaining about boredom and nagging Madame Pomfrey to let him out, the visits became a little less tense for everyone. Most of the Weasley siblings were comfortably spread around the room when Harry, Ron, and Hermione arrived. Fred, George, and Percy were sitting on Fred's bed, playing cards and mulling over inventory reports from Lee and Diagonale at the same time. Mr. and Mrs. Weasley and Charlie were in the far corner of the room, quietly conversing. Bill and Ginny were sitting on the bed next to Fred's, with Lupin's fifth-year defense textbook open next to them. She was in his lap and appeared to have dozed off while showing him the owl subjects they were working on. He shifted her weight so that he could wave at Hermione, Ron, and Harry. As they shook hands, Ginny awoke.
"Oh, Bill, I didn't mean to fall asleep. You must have lost all the feeling in your legs by now."
Bill laughed out loud. "You're not that big yet, love." He scooped her into his arms. Charlie stepped away from his parents and held out his arms.
"Just pass her over here, Bill."
That odd request set off an explosion of activity that had Harry and Hermione jumping in surprise. Parchments, quills, and playing cards went flying in every direction as Fred, George, and Percy dove off the bed and into the center of the room between Bill and Charlie.
"Excellent! Ginny ball!"
Ron whooped and ran to join the group without missing a beat. As Harry and Hermione watched in amazement, they began chanting,
"Block that shot! Block that shot!" Block
Ginny that shrieked and grabbed Bill's
shot.
Neck in a stranglehold.
"Block that shot!
No!
Block that shot.
Mum! Dad!
Block
make them
shot.
Stop!"
Block
Mrs.
Shot.
Weasley managed
block
to sputter
shot.
Out,
"Oh, for pity's sake,
block
boys!
That shot. Block
and that's
that
enough!" Mr. Weasley's voice, surprisingly stern, quieted the group. With all eyes upon him, Arthur Weasley broke into a boyish grin.
"Ginny ball is an outdoor game."
The entire Weasley clan exploded in laughter at the look of outrage Ginny turned on her father. Bill set Ginny on her feet and fell to the floor himself, laughing helplessly. Hermione's face had a look of horror on it.
"Ginny, they didn't really..."
Ginny looked around at her hysterical brothers.
"Oh yes, Hermione, they did."
Ron and George came up from where they'd been rolling on the floor, laughing.
"Come on," yelled Fred. "Ginny ball is a great game."
"Ugh."
He rubbed his ribs and grimaced, but still laughed as he sat back on his bed.
"Yeah," echoed George, plunking himself down next to Fred. "We didn't drop you that often, Ginjin."
Hermione shook her head.
"How did you survive growing up with six older brothers?"
Bill put a hand gingerly to his still tender neck. "By being just as tough as the rest of us." That started the laughter up again, and Harry and Hermione joined in. Ginny tried for a moment longer to maintain her air of wounded dignity, then she too burst out laughing. Madame Pomfrey, brought running by all the commotion, shook her head at them and muttered,
"I cannot take much more of this."
True to her word, she released Fred at last that evening, and there was much rejoicing, not just from the living, either. Peeves happened to be in the corridor when the Weasleys departed as a group. He'd taken to spending quite a lot of time near the hospital wing, and swooped down on the twins.
Hooray! Free! Free at last! What would we have done without you? My ickle Weasleys, my beloved beasties, what are these old Peeves he sick you did?
To the astonishment of everyone, he seized Fred by the ears and began planting big, wet, smacking kisses all over his face. Fred let out a yowl of horror and dove for cover, scrambling to get away as Peeves swept after the two of them, uttering loud declarations of adoration that echoed down the corridors. Harry, Hermione, and the Weasleys looked at each other in amusement. From the hospital wing doorway, Madame Pomfrey observed,
"And all is right with the world."
Indeed it was. The Quidditch teams had been given permission to start practicing again, and the make-up match against Hufflepuff was rescheduled for late November. With tension building as the wizarding world awaited news of Voldemort, everyone at Hogwarts seemed to seize on the game as a distraction, and so excitement ran as high as if it were the Quidditch Cup final and not the first game of the season. But, as luck would have it, Harry's dizzy spells had returned. This time they were different. Instead of simple disorientation, Harry saw a green light, and the world seemed to fade away for a moment. It never lasted long, but it was highly unsettling. None of the teachers in the order could shed any light on it.
"Perhaps this is a sign that you are beginning to successfully block Lord Voldemort, Harry," said Dumbledore during an impromptu meeting in his office after Harry had faded out in charms. "Ah, Severus," he said, as Snape came in. "Have you noticed any progress in occlumency recently?"
"Yes," said Snape, in a tone that made Harry think he loathed acknowledging it. As Remus entered the office, Snape scowled but admitted grudgingly, "Lupin's centering instructions appear to have had an impact."
"I don't have to use my wand anymore," Harry said proudly, looking at Remus. "Well, not most of the time, anyway."
Remus smiled broadly.
"Excellent, Harry."
"So what's this light he keeps seeing?" Snape asked, obviously wanting to get off the subject of praising Harry.
"Maybe Lord Voldemort is trying and failing to penetrate Harry's mind," said Dumbledore, stroking his beard thoughtfully.
Harry frowned, watching Fawkes preening on his perch.
"Then what happened before when I was dizzy? I couldn't block him then."
"Ah, Miss Granger offered the theory that Voldemort was using the dizziness to prevent you from seeing his preparations for the attack on Hogwarts, and to keep you immobilized while it was carried out,"
Dumbledore said. Harry grimaced. "It worked, then." Remus looked troubled.
"But why would he waste energy attacking Harry's mind during the strike, when he needed to hold the wards open? His Death Eaters might have escaped if he'd given his concentration to that fully."
"The Dark Lord can't fear Potter that much," Snape said, in a scornful tone to hide the fact that he was agreeing with Lupin. Dumbledore popped a sherbet lemon into his mouth.
"I think it possible that his attack on Harry may have had greater motives behind it."
"How did he bring down the wards?" Harry asked.
"I believe Voldemort managed to enter the school underground through the Chamber of Secrets," said Dumbledore. "Our protections are most compromised there. Salazar Slytherin left a means for his heir to drop the wards, yet this is what puzzles me. Voldemort would have had to venture further into the grounds than he did, yet our investigations have found that he came no farther than the chamber."
"None of the Death Eaters went with him. Perhaps some of them augmented the spell from further inside," suggested Remus.
"The Death Eaters he sent to attack the Quidditch Stadium were new initiates, of limited power and use to him. I suspect he intended to abandon them all along."
"What about Malfoy or Lestrange?" said Snape.
"Neither of them possessed the power needed to serve as a conduit for Voldemort in a spell strong enough to bring down the Hogwarts wards,"
said Dumbledore.
"It would require a sorcerer of Voldemort's strength to deliver such power."
Then he looked at Harry.
"And this is what puzzles me."
Out of nervous habit, Harry had been avoiding Dumbledore's eyes. Now he forgot and looked up in astonishment. Dumbledore, in turn, focused just beyond Harry's shoulder, as usual.
"Me?" Harry blurted. "But how..."
I suspect your dizziness was the result of Lord Voldemort entering your mind and using your own power to probe for weaknesses in the wards, and during the attack to bring them down, while he remained in a position to escape cleanly.
Dumbledore told him gently.
You are the only wizard in the world whose power equals his, Harry. The only one capable of being of use to him in that fashion. Perhaps he is doing this in hope of countering the protection of the Pillar of Storge.
That would require a very strong magical bond, said Remus. Could his scar alone be the cause? Snape made a disgusted sound.
The torch. The green flame torch. He said it would burn them.
That is my suspicion,
said Dumbledore.
And there may be a means of testing it. Harry, I would like you to look at me.
Harry swallowed, not quite meeting his eyes.
You think he'll try to possess me?
Most likely, if we maintain eye contact for any length of time. He fears what I might confide in you. But try to occlude your mind. If it is only your scar that connects him to you, he may not be aware of my presence with you. With the torch, he would have the means of tracking your comings and goings to a much greater extent.
Remus and Snape both slowly took their wands out, looking very apprehensive. Harry said,
But what if I can't? What if I can't keep him out?
We will be here. Don't be afraid,
Dumbledore said softly.
Look at me. We will see if Tom shows his hand.
Trembling, Harry concentrated, breathing slowly despite his pounding heart, and seeking his center. He had to be calm if he was going to keep Voldemort out, especially considering how Voldemort always reacted to his looking at Dumbledore. Slowly, he raised his eyes to meet Dumbledore's directly. It had been a long time since he'd done so, and he'd forgotten how gentle and kind the headmaster's eyes were. It was... But suddenly, he hated them. He felt his face flush, and a powerful desire to strike the man, to hurt him.
Close your mind, Harry.
No, he would not. Dumbledore was wrong. The boy was his. Harry squeezed his eyes shut, trying to force out the foreign thoughts and feelings.
Ground, center, find the forest. Breathe, push him out.
Harry's scar stabbed with pain. He would fail. Dumbledore. They would all fail. The boy was not strong enough.
Think. Breathe. Center. The clearing. Calm. Get away. Ah!
Then Harry's scar burst open, and he only had time to gasp out,
No!
Before the red-eyed creature's coils surged up from somewhere inside his head and wrapped themselves around him, crushing him.
You cannot stop me, Dumbledore.
The creature hissed as Harry's mind screamed in agony.
The boy is mine. Harry, fight him. Destroy him if you wish your school to survive, or I will destroy all your children. Is this one worth all their lives? Harry.
Remus, help me. Can't breathe.
I will destroy all of you, Dumbledore. Your school, your students, and the traitor.
From the blinding haze of pain, Harry heard a shout.
The Gillimans!
Then images began to roll past his mind's eye, vivid to him because he couldn't see beyond the creature's coils, and the pillar room rose up from his memory. Harry plunged toward it as a refuge, seeking the shelter of his mother's arms, safety, love. The coils loosened, and Harry fell into Professor Lupin's arms, shivering helplessly.
Harry, my God!
Cold!
Harry gasped, trying to burrow into the shabby robes, and Remus pulled him to the fireside, sitting him almost directly in the hearth and wrapping Harry in his cloak.
Sorry, he mumbled, his teeth chattering. Couldn't block.
Shh, it's all right, Harry,
said Dumbledore from behind him, as Remus vigorously rubbed his back. Forks flew down to Harry's side and began to sing, very softly. Harry felt the cold melt away.
Better?
Yes.
Forgive me, Harry. I feel that was a foolish decision on my part. The green flame torch has given Voldemort a far stronger hold on your mind than any of us anticipated.
Dumbledore sighed.
It's okay, Harry muttered.
though he wondered why Dumbledore had thought he'd have any more success without the Green Flame Torch than with it. It wasn't as if he'd ever had much luck preventing Voldemort from possessing him. Remus kept rubbing his shoulders, looking stricken. Albus, we have to do something. If this happens in public...
I know, Remus. Believe me. The possibility of such an event occupies my mind constantly. Percy Weasley may have only bought us time.
At the first chance he got, Harry told Ron and Hermione about what had happened in Professor Dumbledore's office, and what they were all beginning to fear might happen. I'm getting better at occlumency, but I can't stop him from possessing me. If it happens in public, the whole world will find out.
Oh, Harry,
Hermione moaned.
This is awful.
Did it hurt? Ron asked solemnly. Harry nodded. Each time I think this time I'm going to die. I can't see or breathe. He swallowed hard. He could use my body to attack someone, and I couldn't stop him. He could hurt you. He leaned back against the tree they were sitting under near the lake and closed his eyes. Sorry, I'm always tired lately.
Don't blame me, mate, said Ron. Have you been dreaming?
Harry shook his head. I just keep seeing green. It's odd.
Green?
Hermione mused.
Like a curse?
No, it's like a light, or a haze. I'm not sure, but it doesn't feel like a vision.
Maybe Voldemort's taken to swimming in pond scum, said Ron, and they all groaned.
Still, said Hermione, there must be something we can do. Remus was right. If Fudge and his lackeys found out...
I'm dead, Harry finished. They both winced. Percy told me Fudge would go that far.
Why the blazes is Percy still working for him? Ron exclaimed.
Hermione grinned, stretching out on the grass.
Think, Ron. Remember why Fudge hired Percy in the first place? Let's just say Percy probably is still spying.
Ron's mouth fell open, and Harry nodded. Just for our side now. He spent a lot of time talking to Dumbledore while he was here visiting the twins. Then he sighed. But Dumbledore said last night Percy may only have bought us time.
All the same, remind me to hug him next time I see him.
Do you think he'll be able to warn us if Fudge makes another move against you?
Asked Hermione. I don't know. Let's hope so, said Harry. He yawned heavily. He'd spent all night long without any real dreams except the green haze. Why was he so tired? Ron and Hermione were watching him.
Maybe you should take a nap during lunch, said Ron.
But you need to eat too, said Hermione. I'll steal you some sandwiches and bring them up before Transfiguration.
Harry grinned. Yes, Mum and Dad.
Oi, we've got practice tomorrow, Ron said defensively. I want you in top form.
Aye, aye, Captain.
But he did take their advice.
Harry, Harry, wake up. There's been an attack.
He woke from more green haze, feeling less rested than ever, to Hermione shaking him.
Did you see anything?
Harry shook his head, rubbing his eyes. Nothing at all, he said as he got up. Oof. He sat down again.
All right, mate, asked Ron.
He was holding a plate of sandwiches.
Here,
said Hermione, thrusting one at him.
Eat up. Everyone's going to be pestering you.
Harry obediently took a bite. What did they hit? He asked around a mouthful of bread and cheese.
The University of Edinburgh and the American Capitol again. It was almost simultaneous, and there's still some things being studied,
Hermione told him. Anyone killed? He asked quietly, dreading the answer. Ron nodded grimly.
We don't know the details yet, but everyone's really worried. They say two buildings in Edinburgh got completely blown up.
Probably to hide what they'd taken, said Hermione. Eat up, Harry.
With an effort, Harry finished his sandwich, but they made him eat a second.
People are already wanting to know if you knew anything, Ron warned.
Harry sighed, feeling less of an appetite than ever.
Not this time.
That's not your fault. You're not supposed to be having visions from Voldemort in the first place,
huffed Hermione.
And anyone who complains about it is an idiot.
Do we still have class?
Harry asked, finishing the second sandwich.
Yes, although how much will get accomplished remains to be seen,
Hermione said grimly. Feeling equally grim, Harry headed out of the dormitory with them. In Transfiguration, Professor McGonagall was most definitely distracted. She assigned them to practice the spells they'd been doing last class, then sat at her desk as owls came and went in a steady stream, snatching and scanning their letters and writing hasty responses. She didn't even notice that the students were even less effectual than usual at turning quills into flowers. Class was halfway over, and Ron had just managed to turn their quill into an earthworm when the door opened. Professor McGonagall looked up, and all the students turned around in their desks. In the doorway was a tall wizard that none of them recognized. He was an older man, with a well-receded hairline and neatly trimmed salt-and-pepper beard, wearing a dark robe trimmed with green tartan. His keen black eyes took in the curious faces of the students before settling on Professor McGonagall, whose chin was resting on her hand as she regarded him. Her lips curved into a faint smile, and she remarked sardonically,
"Typical. Every witch or wizard I have ever met in Edinburgh has managed to owl me that they are well, except for you."
The strange wizard replied blithely,
"Forgive me. In that case I'll return to Edinburgh at once and send an owl from there to inform you that I'm well."
Professor McGonagall let out a single snort of laughter and stood up, walking briskly toward the door.
"Class dismissed,"
she said as she passed the desks, without giving the students so much as a glance. Everyone in the class stared after her, confusion written all over their faces, all except Hermione, that is. She was beaming.
"What was that all about?" demanded Ron.
Turning to them, Hermione said,
"That man is a very well-known visiting barrister from Edinburgh. He also does magical research at the university."
"So he came to report on the attack?" asked Neville from next to Harry.
"Among other things," said Hermione with a sly smile. "I'm astonished that we've been here so long and none of you know of him."
At their blank stares, she finished triumphantly,
"His name is McGonagall. Murder McGonagall."
"McGonagall?" Ron's mouth fell open. "You mean..." He gaped at the door. Hermione grinned and nodded.
"Mr. McGonagall is Professor McGonagall's husband."
"Did you know she was married?"
Ron asked Harry when they went downstairs for dinner.
"Not me," Harry said.
"Me neither," said Neville. "I feel badly, like I shouldn't have assumed she wasn't."
"It's not as if she's told as much of her life story," protested Ron, "other than what she told Umbridge during the inspections, that is."
"But Hermione knew," said Neville.
"Hermione knows everything," said Harry dismissively.
"I do wonder what he's doing here."
"Ask Hermione," chuckled Ron.
"Ask me what?"
Hermione scampered down the stairs behind them, trailed by Ginny.
"What McGonagall's husband is doing here," said Harry. "None of us have ever seen him before."
"She usually goes to Edinburgh during the holidays," said Hermione, "but I heard him telling her his offices got destroyed during the attack. She introduced me. He seems nice enough."
"His offices?" Ron frowned. "I thought he was a barrister."
"He does lots of things,"
said Hermione.
"He's very brilliant. A great mind in the wizarding world, from what I've read of his work."
"Sounds like Professor McGonagall's type," said Ron, earning a smack from both Hermione and Ginny.
"I think he's handsome,"
Ginny said archly.
"What? He's ancient," Ron exclaimed.
Harry privately agreed, but didn't want to risk the girl's wrath by saying so aloud. At present they were pummeling Ron with their notebooks. Harry and Neville trailed behind Ron and his assailants, and were just deeming it safe to catch up again when Harry began feeling light-headed. The staircase began to tilt, but it didn't have anything to do with the usual idiosyncrasies of Hogwarts.
"Hey, Harry! Ron!"
Neville yelled as Harry started to sway.
"Harry, what is it?"
They all ran back up the steps as Harry bent over the banister.
"Just dizzy."
"Sit down,"
Hermione ordered, and he sank onto the stair with Ron on one side and Ginny on the other. His vision was blurry, and green was edging everything. The haze seemed to be closing in, blurring away the world.
"He's bleeding out. I'm getting help."
Footsteps thumped off down the stairs as the green fog carried Harry away. He came round to find himself propped up against Ginny's shoulder, and Remus bending over him.
"Harry, can you hear me?"
"Yeah," he mumbled, sitting up with their help. Remus looked at Harry's eyes and felt his face.
"You're a bit warm. Did you see anything?"
"Yeah." Harry smiled dryly. "Green." Remus chuckled.
"I see. Let's get you to the hospital wing."
"I think I'm all right now,"
Harry protested, but they all looked skeptical.
"All the same, I want Madame Pomfrey to check you out," said Remus firmly,
and helped Harry to his feet. Hermione was giving Remus a very intense look, and Harry glared at her.
"What?"
"Nothing."
"Likely story," he thought, but he checked his temper in front of Remus and allowed himself to be ushered off to the hospital wing. When they arrived, Madame Pomfrey poked and prodded Harry for an irritating length of time before concluding,
"Above all else, Mr. Potter, you are overtired."
"But I've been sleeping fine," Harry insisted.
Hermione told me you were seeing this green light in your dreams,
Rimmer said pointedly. Harry nodded, confused, and the werewolf sat down, rubbing the back of his neck.
That must be the key, but I can't imagine what it means.
I believe it is time we found out,
said Professor Dumbledore, coming into the hospital wing with Snape behind him. He patted Harry's hand, without meeting his eyes.
Harry, would you permit us to see your dreams?
Harry blinked. Well, yes. I mean, how will you do that? Dumbledore gestured to Snape, who was holding his pensive.
While you sleep, it is possible to view what your mind sees.
Harry frowned, considering it. He wasn't certainly like the idea of people poking around in his mind while he was unconscious. Do you think you'll be able to see more than I can tell you about? He asked, stalling. Dumbledore nodded.
As is always true with a pensive, we will see all that surrounds your mind's eye, beyond what you carry with you back to wakefulness.
It would help, Harry,
Remus said. Slowly, Harry nodded. All right. What do I have to do?
Madame Pomfrey, a sleeping draught, please,
said Dumbledore. Lupin and Snape set up screens around Harry's bed, while Harry sat there wondering if it was possible to feel more self-conscious. He studied his hands until Madame Pomfrey returned with the potion.
Give me your hand, Harry.
Dumbledore pressed Harry's palm against the pensive in a way that reminded him of the green flame torch. Fortunately, no blood was involved, or Harry's imagination might have run away with him. Dumbledore murmured an incantation that caused a little tingle to run from the top of Harry's head to the tips of his fingers, then released him. Madame Pomfrey handed the little vial to Harry.
You'll sleep for about half an hour.
Harry took it and nodded.
Sweet dreams,
Rimmer said teasingly, and Harry relaxed a little, smiling at him. He didn't need to be worried if Remus was there. He gulped down the contents of the vial, then lay back on the bed and let the green fog roll over him. He floated in it for a time he couldn't measure, until someone's shaking brought him around.
Mr. Potter, wake up now, said Madame Pomfrey.
Harry sat up and put on his glasses. At a bed next to his, still behind the screens, Dumbledore, Snape, and Lupin were crowded around the pensive, and when they looked at him they were all frowning.
What did you see? He asked.
Remus looked very worried.
Nothing. Did you see the green light?
Puzzled, Harry nodded.
The whole time? Why didn't the pensive work?
Because, said Madame Pomfrey gravely, you were not dreaming. I watched you closely the entire time. Your eyes never moved.
What?
Harry looked at the teachers for confirmation. Remus nodded.
That explains why you've been so tired. Good or bad, people need to dream. Whatever this green light is, it's disrupting your regular sleep so you don't get truly rested.
And so I don't have visions, Harry finished.
Precisely, said Dumbledore. Lord Voldemort's doing, I've no doubt.
So what do I do if I can't really sleep?
Harry asked in despair.
All that sleep and still being so tired.
There are ways of inducing undisturbed sleep, said Dumbledore. We shall have to place some additional wards around your dormitory.
Snape had been staring at Harry with that same perturbed expression he'd been wearing very often lately, but then he stood up.
I will get started, Headmaster.
Thank you, Severus.
Snape walked quickly back down the empty hospital wing and out the doors. Harry tried and failed to stifle a yawn, and Dumbledore smiled, his eyes on the stand next to the bed.
We'll make every effort to allow you to begin sleeping normally tonight, Harry.
Harry sighed. That'd be nice.